We don't talk about sin very much in the Episcopal Church. And I am glad we don't use guilt or shame or fear as our approach to faith. My sense is that folks are generally not showing up here on Sunday morning longing for an extended sermon on sin. Maybe I'm wrong. And still, it comes up in our readings, like today. There are many ways to think about sin, the ways we hurt people, the things we've left undone, or as we sometimes say in our confession, the evil done on our behalf. The most helpful explanation I've heard, though, is that sin is what separates us from God, or what we do that separates other people from God. Things that make it hard to know our belovedness, hard to tap into that grace that pervades everything. That's where Jesus starts today, but I want to begin with where he ends. It's that last line that where two or three are gathered in his name, Jesus is present among us. As I hear it today, his brief note of assurance is directly connected to the beginning, to paying attention to those ways we stumble and fall away, or where, because of what's happened in our lives, it's become hard to find God close at hand. He's inviting us to consider what coming together with just one other person can make possible. One of the things I remember clearly from the weeks and months after our son Fritz's death, now almost 13 years ago, is the distinct sense that part of my body was gone. We often talk about loss through metaphors, that a piece is missing or that we've left part of ourselves in a treasured place. But that's what it felt like in my body. It was as if I was suddenly concave, hollowed out into a new shape that I didn't recognize. And part of that hole, I think, was also wondering if God was anywhere to be found in that mess. As I began to wrap my mind around this new form of my life and myself, I heard plenty of suggestions of how I might fill that void. I saw ways that people attempted this in their own lives. But even as I began to see that life could be good and joyful and beautiful again, I also had the sense that I would continue on with this small cave in my chest. What would it look like to live this way? I wondered. What would healing mean as I carried on living with something that couldn't be cured or solved? On an otherwise unremarkable spring day, years after Fritz's death, I received a letter in the mail. Sometime earlier, I had sent a letter to Wendell Berry on a whim. Wendell, the great writer and poet and farmer, a modern prophet who died earlier this week. I wrote to tell him how much I appreciated a particular poem of his, which I'd included as the epigraph at the beginning of my book. I told him my story in a sentence, and I shared with him my awe at how he managed to tell in just a couple of lines the complete gift of the resurrection together with the pain it includes. I did not expect to hear anything back. I just needed to thank him. And now here was a plain white envelope in my hand with his return address in the upper left-hand corner. And here was the single sheet of pale yellow paper torn from a legal pad, unfolding into thirds in my hands. I saw his pencil dancing in cursive across the page. Wendell spoke of my son's death and the response that it conjured in him. He did not know me. He did not know my son. It had been years since he died. Wendell knew this. And even still, he wrote of how he found himself, quote, "wishing I could help, knowing the littleness of my wish in the presence of the greatness of love and loss." I read this line again and then again. He understood that the pain must still linger, and he reached for it, not wanting to fix it, but to bring succor, and yet knowing that this simple help was still a lofty hope. That one sentence contained all the grace I could need. I went to bed that night with these words still circling in me, and they were present early the next morning when I rose to take our puppy outside. And when I went back to bed, the world outside my window was still completely dark. But as I lay there, I felt light in my chest. I recognized that it had a shape. I felt that there were angles and corners and curves to the light. Just as I had felt how a part of me had become concave in those early throes of grief, that same concave shape was now made of light. The broken shape radiated a steady, warm glow from within me, there in the dark before daybreak. This brokenness was not fixed, but somehow it was also whole. I lay in the dark, quietly soaking in this surprising light, and I thought again of Wendell's simple words and his longing to help. He did, I thought, he did help. I knew it was his words that somehow brought on this light. The invitation I hear from Jesus this morning is to honor the power of two people coming together. It can take so many forms. The grace of showing up with a generous heart, or of someone else arriving especially open and ready. The goodness of coming together to conspire boldly for the goodness of our world, or to laugh with ease, or to serve someone with care. When we come together like this, Jesus tells us that he is there with us. It's not just that it was a lovely afternoon with a friend, it was holy. There is so much that we cannot control in this life, but showing up with kindness and generosity and openness just to one other person, this is in our control. It has the power to show us that God is right in our midst. Of course, it's not all poetry and fresh-baked pies and hikes through the wildflowers. Sometimes when we come together, it's about doing the hard work, just as Jesus outlines in today's gospel. This is maybe among the most practical advice that we get in the Bible. If someone has hurt you, go to them directly, even if it was unintentional, quietly, just the two of you. Let them know and look for a way forward. If that doesn't work, get help. Bring a friend. The assurance is that even as tricky or awkward or vulnerable as those conversations are, God is present with those couple of folks trying to work it out. And sometimes we come together and we try, and it still doesn't work. As we get to the end of Jesus' roadmap, it might sound like we end up exiling these horrible sinners from the community. But that couldn't be further from what he intends. If it doesn't work, he says, let them be like a Gentile and a tax collector to you. Jesus ate with the tax collectors. Matthew, who tradition holds wrote this gospel, was a tax collector before he became a disciple. Jesus heals Gentiles. He listens to them. He is changed by them. Even if these various attempts for reconciliation don't work, still, we can hold space. We can offer welcome. We can look for ways to come together. We can trust that God will be present with us when we do. There is so much hurt in this world, in this life. Hurt we've caused, hurt we've inherited, the hurt that's just happened because life just happens. With or without malice, it can threaten to separate us from God. Not because God has gone anywhere, but because it can be hard for us to see God there, hard to receive grace or to hope. And this is why we are given to each other. When we come together in love, even just two of us, even in a letter sent across the miles, God joins us there. I think it's often easier to see God there than on our own, easier to trust. The space where we meet is holy. It's hallowed by our coming together. Just two or three is all it takes, and God will be there among us.